Today is a great day for a car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.
Good day and welcome to the car wash. This is episode number 43. On today's show, we react to the PSL's intense finale, Sundowns La Decima, Chiefs heartbreak, Pirates clinching a CAF spot, and more. And we also analyze Sundowns signings for the season. So whether you are listening to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, the SL Podcast Network, or Game Time on Mahikeng 96.7 FM, welcome to the show. Before we get into the show, a word from our sponsors, Cadbury themselves. Cadbury FC, hashtag taste the action, is back. And this time, they've partnered with five of the top English football clubs. That includes Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United, and Tottenham Hotspur, all to bring fans closer to the soccer action. So join host Andile Ngcube and some of the legends of English football, including Bafana Bafana and Manchester United legend himself, Quentin Fortune, at the exclusive Cadbury Taste the Action experience. It's your chance to rub shoulders virtually, of course. You know, we can't rub shoulders these days. With some of your football heroes, the experience will be completely virtual. That allows you to attend from the comfort of your own home. There will be opportunities for questions while you enjoy a true taste of the action. Kickoff is at 6 p.m. on September 17th. You can register at crowdcast.io/e/taste_the_action. That link will also be in the show description. But we get back to the show. I am your host, Salu Paho, and of course I'm not alone. Joining me is the man whose confidence jinxed Amakosi's title ambitions. It's Sean Roberts.
Thanks, Ludog. I appreciate it.
And also, the man who's actually been accurately predicting a lot of things about the PSL recently, it's Steko Modise. How are you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic, sir. How are you today?
I'm all good, all good. The sun is finally shining. I was about to say shinily fining. The sun is finally shining on this on the city of Cape Town, and so I'm happy. And so I'm in a good mood, so I think we should start off with a joke of the day. Shauna, what you got for us, bro?
Right. Why are elevator jokes so classic and good? Because they work on so many levels.
Come back from where you are, my friend. Come back from where you are. Wherever you at, come back.
Oh, no. No.
Beautiful.
Oh, well, let's just dive right into this, guys. I think emotions were running high heading into this last weekend, and the PSL did not disappoint. The AFSA Premiership, AFSA got the best send-off imaginable. It went all the way down to the wire. Let's start with the champions, of course. Sundowns complete La Decima. It is Pitso Mosimane's fifth PSL trophy as boss. Of course, four of those with Mamelodi Sundowns. He completes a three-peat, third one in a row, and there's the potential for a treble. After the match, he was quoted as saying, "It's very emotional. La Decima gave Absa a good send-off. They love us and we love them." And then he said he's not as excited as he was when they beat Free State Stars, referencing, of course, last season's finale. But he said he's very, very emotional and a little bit sad, but it's okay. They won the trophy. Why do you think he said that, Sean? Why do you think that was his response?
I think there's so much going on behind the scenes, Slu, at Sundowns. There's a lot of doubters. I think the comeback that they achieved this season is, you know, it's no short of a miracle and phenomenal. And that's all down to, you know, obviously the players, but a strong coach that Sundowns have, but that's in Pitso. I think what they overcame, you know, how they bounced back from, I think it was a 13-point deficit at one stage, and obviously when you're at the top, which he is, you're going to have haters, bro. It's life. And I think he's finally silenced those, whatever critics he has had, he's finally silenced them, and he's shown his worth now with his new contract that he signed for Sundowns. And don't be surprised if we see them CAF champions this year as well.
Sean Roberts. Look, Slu, you know, there's something that Pisu said after the game, and I tried to analyze it. I might be wrong, but I think he spoke about it, interference, you know, and when a coach of his caliber speaking of interference, it can only come, you know, from the management side. I think, you know, with the new contract, there was pressure of winning the league, the stress as well. Yes, I don't think he was that excited. I think he was more relieved than anything else. And for me, it's very concerning for a team that is so successful and there's still interference, especially with the coach that is colorful as beads with the trophies as well. But also it comes with the contract that you signed, right? And also with the players that he signed and the money that the team spent. I think there's more ambitions, there's bigger things to win. Maybe the expectations were to win the trophy, you know, very easily like they've done in the past where there's no stress like this. But I think it comes with the contract, dude, and it comes with being a big coach. It comes with the number one coach in the country. I think he dealt with those very, very well. But I knew that at some point he felt or that maybe Kansas Chiefs would have won, you know, because you could tell with his statements after the games, he would be like, you know, if we win it, we do. If we don't, we don't. That's the sign of a person that actually realizing what's at stake. Mm. But I mean, they did it, you know, and yeah, man, you know, congratulations to them. Wow. Absa couldn't have asked for better send off. Mm. But Slew. Mm. I did say that somebody's going to cry.
Somebody's going to cry. Yes. Yes.
I did say, but it's just that football, my friend, somebody would say that there's no therefore. It's just unfortunate. You know, somebody will celebrate, somebody will, you know, be at a place where it's not nice. But I feel sorry for the players of Kansas Chiefs. You know, I don't wish that on anybody. You know, after being number one the whole season until the last game of the league. Mm. I think, you know, they deserve something, but it's just unfortunate. But yet again, you know, with Sundowns, we shouldn't be surprised of what Sundowns have achieved so far. It's because they built a team in 2014. They started rebuilding a team, a new team that is this successful now. I think maybe, you know, it's high time for Kansas Chiefs to start doing so. Orlando Pirates have changed the team. They've rebuilt the team. Hopefully they'll continue with that. I think it's high time that Kansas Chiefs start rebuilding the team.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Who knows? Just to butt in there, I mean, we obviously all watched the Chiefs game, and they've done so well this season, and I must give credit before I say what I'm going to say. But I just, looking at that game, you kind of felt, unless they were all exhausted, but you wouldn't have said they were fighting for their lives in that game. It was a very sort of mediocre pace. They were losing so many 50-50s, and it was just a bizarre ending, really. There's just no, what's the word, for enthusiasm, or the final third, there was just nothing. I don't know. I just felt like it was a friendly. It looked like a friendly game to me.
I would almost say that it's just that they had no ideas. Like, there was a point in that match where it just looked like they didn't know, apart from throwing the ball up all the way to the top, they had no creativity. Maybe that's what it was from my perspective. But when you run out of ideas, it does start to look like you're tired, and it does start to look like you don't even have energy, right? Maybe that's just a supporter's perspective.
Yeah, but also, Slew, that's been the problem for Kansas Chiefs in the buyer bubble. You know, we spoke about the predictability of Kansas Chiefs long, even last year. We spoke about, yes, they're winning, but, you know, it becomes so predictable, and it's easy to plan against a team that is so predictable. Now, in the buyer bubble, when the demands were higher, you know, when the players are supposed to dig deeper, they didn't have that. Mm. And that's when you question the depth of the team. But there's so many things that you can question about Chiefs, but you can't fault the effort that the players have put in throughout the whole season. So I just hope that with what happened right now, it's not going to open a can of worms into Chiefs. Now people start talking bad about the team. I think They need to have their own meetings, you know, sit down and reflect on the previous season, look at stuff that they need to perfect or do right next season and build from there. Because, you know, from, Slu, Mamelodi Sundowns, when Pizzo came, they were in relegation zone. We were number 15 on the log. You know, there were placards on the street that, you know, a multi-billion dollar team will be in Vela. It was a joke. People were making fun of us. And then Pizzo came in and told us straight that he's going to fight to make sure the team survives. After that, he's going to win the league next season. But by doing so, he needs to sign new players because all the guys that have been there, they've been there too long. They don't have ambitions anymore. And it sounded so rude. And we fought. Yes, we came number 9. We never played top 8 that the next season, but we won the league. But that's what I'm saying. That he rebuilt the team, and sometimes to make those type of decisions, it's not nice. It's very uncomfortable. But when you look at Kaizer Chiefs team, you look at what Sean was saying. Because I watched both teams when they were playing in the final day, you could tell that Sundowns wanted it more. Sundowns wanted to win, irrespective of what Kaizer Chiefs is doing on the other side.
Yeah.
When you look at Kaizer Chiefs, the way they were playing, Chief, even if it means long ball from first minute, it doesn't matter because you want to win the game. But you also want to be in a position where you are fighting for 3 points, because that's what Kaizer Chiefs was supposed to do, just fight. Mm. No, don't forget about being creative, because you couldn't do that the whole season. That day is about fighting. And sometimes that's when you start questioning the characters of the players, the characters of the team. Do they have the personnel to be able to fight when it's tough? Because that's what makes championship. It's tough, that's when players need to raise their hands, you know, start fighting for the team. And I didn't see that in the Bayer Bubble with Kaizer Chiefs. Not even one game.
Now let me ask this: the squad itself. What next for them?
Yeah, it's a good question, Slu. Look, they've got a good squad, but also it doesn't look like they've got a happy squad. I mean, there's talks of Kieran Backus wanting to leave. That's been widely reported in the press as well. But for sure, they need strength across the back four. They need strength in that midfield. Up front, I'm quite happy with them. They're just not lethal enough. But I think when Billiard finds his form again, you've got Nurkovic, you've got Castro, you can't ask for much more in terms of your front three. But midfield needs to, you know, since George Madueke left, it was a different team. You can say what you want, but 100% they had no ideas. And we've seen how they've been defensively, which is a bit concerning. So don't be surprised if we see some big signings in terms of defensively and in the midfield. Up front, I'm okay. I'm okay. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with the goalkeeping situation as well, because with Kune being back now, it's interesting times.
I don't wish to be an Kaizer Chiefs board member, because it's tough. Because I just hope that the decision that they're going to make, Slu, they're not going to be based on emotions. They're going to be based on facts. You need to look at the team. Where do you need to strengthen the team? It's the creativity part. More players that are willing to fight for the team. Defensively, if we were lacking, where can you sign? Who is available? Who is a better signee that will fit the profile of the team and the goalkeeping department as well? Those guys are 33, 34. What is it that you want to do? The striking department, yes, we were just waiting for Karma to hit his form. How do you build? Who are you going to build the team around next season? And you also need to bring the players that will also bring out the best players, you know, out, so they can start performing well. So I think Lebo tried this season. George, when he was there, he was more calm on the ball in the midfield. Lebo was shiny because there was that calmness in the midfield. But I think to a certain degree, I think Kaizer Chiefs could have done better. And I think this has exposed them in not signing better players for them to actually be contending or maybe winning the league. Because I think the difference between Kaizer Chiefs not winning the league, it's because they didn't have enough players to help them. And you can't fault the coach, because he used what he had. And I think it's unfortunate for a team like Kaizer Chiefs not to have depth within their team and depth and quality. Now, I'm not talking about the numbers, but depth and quality, because you have to compare them with the big, with other two big teams. The Pirates have the depth for days. Sundowns has the depth for days. So it's, I think they don't need to be too hard of themselves. They need to look at their squad. They did the best that they can last season. Oh, the previous season, they were number 9 on the log. They came back, they fought, they were number 1 until. So now there's a lot of positives that they can come out. Yes, it's said that they could have won the league long time ago, but I think they need to start making decisions that are going to be painful, that are going to be hurtful. There's guys that have been within the team for the longest time. You start valuing the, you start reevaluating them into the team, whether they fit enough to play in the system that the coach wants. I don't think it's a good idea for them to let go of the coach, because now, which means next season they have no intention of signing any players, because they're thinking that the coach is the problem. And I don't think right now the coach is the problem. The coach used what he could. Coach used what he had. And I think that's always been the problem with the coaches that come to Kaizer Chiefs. Steve Compella was the same. He got there, he used what he had. He had no way of signing any players to come in. He used what he had. And sometimes I think there's certain things that teams, if they want to move forward, they need to change. Kaizer Chiefs is a big team. It's a team that is loved by so many. When Kaizer Chiefs is on form, the league becomes so interesting. So is Pirates, so is Mamelodi Sundowns. I believe that next season we need to see a better Kaizer Chiefs, whether they're playing entertaining football or not. But I just want to see a more hungrier team, you know, with more enthusiasm within the team. Like, I feel like there's so many things that are happening within the camp. Many players are not happy. Many players are off form. That could have been a factor. But they've got another chance next season. They've got a top 8. They've got a top. Let them start with the top 8. I think that's what they need to set the tone up. They need to start with it. They've got an opportunity, Chief. You know, sometimes those bad things happen because you need to reflect on yourself. I think this happened for the players also to reflect on themselves, the contribution that they did within the team. And then you reevaluate yourself and come back next season a better person, because the coach at the end of the day, he's there to make a formation, help you with training and put the first 11. But the people that are supposed to do the job are the players. So we can't fault the management or anybody else. If when you sign for Kaizer Chiefs, you sign to contribute towards the team's success. And I think it's a high time that the players look at themselves and question themselves whether they did enough for the Kaizer Chiefs to win. Forget about the coach.
Yeah, and another thing to look at is, I mean, how long has it been since Chiefs made CAF Champions League? I think people aren't speaking about that enough. They earned a lot of money for finishing second as well, about 7.5 million rand. We don't know if next season is going to be the same amount of prize money. We don't even know if next season has a sponsor just yet. So there are a lot of positives. It's just, you know, losing on the final day like that it's tough. But you know what else happened on the final day is their neighbors, Orlando Pirates, clinched third position, a CAF Confederations Cup spot. That meant in the bubble, they got 3 wins, 1 draw, 2 losses. But they got that CAF Confed spot on goals for, not even goal difference. They were level on goal difference with Wits, and they just had more goals scored. It's a team strengthened ahead of next season. We've heard reports of Tyson and Dion Hotto signing for them. You know, so ahead of next season, what do you guys think a realistic target for Orlando Pirates is?
Yeah, Slu. It's going to, you know, I know we're going to talk about Sundowns a bit later, but it's going to be very, very difficult to see any team come close to Sundowns with the squad they're going to have next season. That's my honest opinion. But realistically, Pirates top 3 again, if not second. But I don't see anyone touching Sundowns.
For me, Slu, I would say if Orlando Pirates keep the same team, the same coach, I think they stand a better chance than Sundowns, merely because there's going to be continuity within the team. Sundowns has signed so many players, which they're going to use next season. And if you look at the duration now, between now and next season, it's within the short space of time. And for those players to adjust to the system and what the demands are, it might take a while. Other players might adjust very quickly. Sure. And I'm not expecting Peter to use the same players that he's been using now. So I think Orlando Pirates stand a better chance, but they need to start right. You know, start right so that whenever maybe you are off form or whatever the case may be, you've got points in their bag that will support you. You always have something. And I think Orlando Pirates always, it's been a team that finishes well, comes second round of the league, they start doing well. I think this time of the season, I mean, this time when they get into the new season, they need to start better. Mm. And they need to continue where they left off. You know, they got a guy that scored 15 goals, the top goal scorer right now.
16.
I think 16, excuse me. So I think they've got a better team. They just need to did the signings. I think they need to fix the, if they can have maybe one more goalkeeper, that'll be probably maybe a fight with Wayne for the number one spot, maybe one or two center backs that'll actually solidify their defense. I think they've got a young, energetic team that can do well next season.
And very quickly, as we round off, Polokwane City relegated from fifth last season to Glad Africa Championship next season. Also, Black Leopards are going to be in the playoffs, so we'll see. But at one point in this season, you could have said there'll be four Limpopo teams in the PSL next season. But now, potentially only two, and that's just because TTM bought Bidvest of its rights. So for Polokwane City, I mean, they played poorly pretty much from start to finish. I don't know if you guys have any reactions to that. Teko, I know you specifically before the final round of games said Polokwane City have to be relegated. So what were your thoughts on them going down?
Yeah, Teko didn't give them a choice, did he?
Yeah.
No, Sean. It's the thing is, I know it was harsh for me to say that, but I've watched Polokwane City this season, how they play. And I also watched the guys that were competing in relegation zone. AmaZulu was just unfortunate. I could see, you know, they're fighting for their lives and they're trying so hard. But the only person that was showing up was Nduli, who was scoring goals for them. And the coaches changed. There was so many dynamics at AmaZulu that could have faltered them not getting more results. But you look at Polokwane City, you know, they the way they were playing, like they were content with just competing, just going to the game and play. That's just my opinion. And for me is, I've always wanted to see teams playing with their heart out. Whether the results, yes, we play to get better results. But if the results are not coming, we can't falter you for effort. But sometimes I feel like, especially now in the buyer bubble, you could see they in the lead, they can't contain the lead, they don't know how to win the game, they don't know how to defend, and within short space of time between training sessions and games, it was difficult for Clinton Larson to regroup and sign a new player, do this, so he had to use what he had. And I think Polokwane City has been lingering around within the league for so long. I remember Polokwane City at some point used to be very good. And I don't know what happened. They stopped signing quality players. They stopped recruiting quality players. And for me, the reason why I said that, it's because I honestly want to see the standard of football in the PSL get stronger and stronger. I'm not tired of speaking about the big three, but I would love to see other teams competing as well, you know, amongst the big three, you know, being a nuisance amongst them. And I think Polokwane City at some point were that team, but not anymore. And you look at the age group within that team, I mean, Nobody from Polokwane City even plays for the national team. Nobody's been considered in the national team. That tells you about the quality of the team. Mm-hmm. You know, and AmaZulu, you can pick five players. You can speak about five players. In Polokwane City, it becomes a problem. And I watch also Leopards playing. Leopards playing beautiful football. But the problem is also they don't have a good goalkeeper. They don't have a good defense. And that's been their problem. But they survived. Maybe hopefully next season they'll look at their squad and try to strengthen their team. But Polokwane City didn't look like a team that wants to strengthen anything. They didn't look like a team that wants to survive. I think they played because they were content. I don't know, Chief. Like, for me, Polokwane City had to go one less trip from Limpopo. And we'll see. We'll see what happens, you know.
But you say that, Teko, I mean, you say that one less trip to Limpopo. But I think with the sale of Highlands Park, I think they want to be relocating to Limpopo, don't they?
No, that's Mpumalanga.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
That's Mpumalanga.
Yeah, that's Mpumalanga.
Mpumalanga.
Before we get into international news desk, we do have to just, I think, recap just the bio bubble itself. For so long, we didn't know. We remember how many shows we had to do. There was no football or no local football. We were pulling stories out of our... And I think looking back, you know, there's just the PSL playoffs now, of course, which we will talk about next week. But the PSL season concluded. Final thoughts on this, you know, insane system that we had to use, but that worked for what we needed, this biologically safe environment. How do you think the league did in terms of, you know, post all of those delays, overall feelings in terms of what we just witnessed?
Slew, all I can say is thank God it's over. That's it. We finally got our champions. We're finally moving on. I don't know what else to say, but I hope we never get to repeat that. Players are home with their families where they belong. All in all, I think it's a good job done by the PSL, considering. Again, we spoke about it last week. I don't know what's going to happen in terms of COVID with the new season, because it's going nowhere and they can't afford to go in a bubble again. So, yeah, interesting times ahead, but job well done, and thank goodness it's over.
Thank goodness it's over. Look, for the players, you know, I just want to commend them for applying themselves under some difficult circumstances. They come out and play, and they gave us, you know, something to talk about. You know, the teams that did well under the in the bio bubble, the teams that struggled. I think the most important thing probably maybe brought players together, because they're spending so much time together, they had no choice. But I just hope that we don't get to that situation anymore. I can imagine the frustration that the players had. I'm sure the other players were like, can this finish? You know, can we get done, sort of can go home? But for me, is I'm glad that the league is finished, and I'm glad that it ended, you know, in the way that it did. You know, it was very, very interesting. Everybody was glued in their TV, watching the games and being interested in the games. And I think, and I just hope that next season, you know, it's going to be as unpredictable as it was in the bio bubble going forward. Yes. Because in the bio bubble, sir, you never knew who was going to win. So I think the next season should start like that, where everybody is entitled of 3 points. Not because you're playing Mamelodi Sundowns or Reading, you know, your odds against you. Because in the bio bubble, we could see that so many teams pulled surprised. You know, Bloemfontein Celtic, they played so beautiful. You know, Cape Town City, we've seen how Leopards came out. We've seen now how AmaZulu started changing, using more of the experienced players coming into play, helping them survive. You know, there's so many things that I think teams have realized about their teams, yeah, that maybe before they didn't. So I think it was a perfect time for the team to actually be able to reflect on themselves and see exactly what is it that they have, what is it that they can add. And for me, I'm excited for the new season. I'm sure nobody will be complaining about the fitness levels, because you know, the teams now they started to get forms and all that stuff. So I think it'll be nice to see all those teams back into their home ground. Whether the fans will be there or not, that's another story. But for me, it's going to be a very interesting season. I just hope that with the new sponsor will come in and say, guys, three teams get relegated immediately.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Then the standard of the football goes up, because I've always complained about teams are coming out and saying, we're playing for top eight. Hey, guys, play to win the trophy. Win trophies. Because at the end of the day, if you're a footballer, what matters most when you're done is how many trophies have you won? What have you won?
Yeah, correct. Exactly.
You won what? Being on the top eight. I think it's high time player teams start changing their mentality. Go for the honors. Try and win the league. Try and whatever competition you're in, fight to win those trophies, because at the end of the day, that's what matters most. You can't be fighting every season. You've been 10 years in the PSL. You never won any trophy. You never been being in the cup final. That's a disaster, Chief.
Yeah.
That's not right. So I think, Inje, new sponsor, I hope they're listening to me.
Have the dates been confirmed for when the next season starts?
So Irvin Khoza recently came out and confirmed that October 9th is when they are planning to restart the season. And I also have it on kind of good authority that every team will be back at their home stadiums, and we will be doing that. But it's going to be very strict protocols, of course. But sure, definitely no fans in the stadium currently. It's just not really manageable. But again, home and away, it's just going to look a whole lot better, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
But we'll see. I mean, you know what? It really sucks for the teams in the PSL playoffs, because they finish on like the 21st. And then if they stay up, if they manage to gain promotion, Then 2 weeks later, you're back playing games. But the rest of them have a nice little month break here, so it should be exciting. But we move on to the international news desk. And for that, we are joined by our international news correspondent, Kurt Buckerfield. Kurt, how are you doing?
Good, Sue. How are you? What's up, guys?
Hello. Oh,
goody, what's up?
So we start with, for weeks, I thought that this was one of those wild, crazy stories, but it turned out to be true. James Rodriguez has joined Everton for £22 million. He's kind of had an up and down career since that breakout 2014 World Cup. Talk me through this. What does it mean for Everton, who seem to be slowly putting together quite a formidable side?
Yeah, Sue. So £22 million. He took a significant wage cut to join Everton, which I guess tells you a lot about his willingness to just get back to playing football, or his determination to get back to playing football. And of course, he reunites with Carlo Ancelotti, who he's worked with twice before, at Bayern Munich and at Real Madrid. It was a strange move. And he has had a weird career. We, of course, all remember his incredible 2014 World Cup, which, of course, put him on Real Madrid's radar. And he had a very good first season in Spain, but has ultimately never quite been as remarkable as he was in Brazil 6 years ago. But if we look a little deeper, I think that his importance for his national team has never wavered. He's got like godlike status in that country. He carries that side on his back. And I think that it's probably because he's a big fish in a relatively small pond. I know Colombia have a few big names, but James is the guy that everything goes through. And in hindsight, we can look back and say that maybe he shouldn't have joined Real Madrid when he did, but nobody could have foreseen that he wasn't really going to cement a place in that side. But superstars like Ronaldo, Bale, Benzema, it was just always going to be difficult for him. But he had to take the risk, of course. It was the right move at the right time. It probably just didn't work out. And at Everton, I think he'll have kind of what he has at Colombia. He'll be the big fish. Everything will go through him. I mean, for a club like Everton to be signing a player like this, I mean, I know that this means little on the pitch, but he has, I think he's the third highest followed footballer or fourth highest followed footballer on Instagram. So in terms of marketing and what it does for a club like Everton, it's absolutely huge. But the most important thing is that James Rodriguez, who's 29, gets back to playing football under a manager who backs him. We have, Sean and Teko are both former pros. They'll know the feeling of playing under a manager who really likes them, versus playing under a manager who you're not sure where you stand with. And that's what he kind of had with Zidane. So I think all in all, it's a great move, and it's exciting to see a player like that come to the Premier League, of course.
Gents, what was your initial reaction to this news? I had to blink my eyes a couple of times when I first saw it.
Yeah, I think Kurt's hit the nail on the head, and it just shows his willingness to start playing again in terms of taking a massive pay cut. But these sort of deals is a complete win-win, and I love to see this and what it's going to bring to the Premier League as well. And Everton's a great club, it's always sort of mid-table, well-supported, and it's going to make that Merseyside derby even more exciting now with Rodriguez up front for Everton.
Everton.
For me, Slu, I'd say it's just as important for a player. It's important to have a coach that backs you and coach that believes in you. And with him doing this, it shows, that he really, really, really wants to go back and be a footballer. He wants to be on the pitch because everybody wants to play. And EPL, we know how strong it is, how competitive it is. So for me, it'll be interesting to see whether he'll go back to and find his form, after what happened with Real Madrid. I think he's got a new leaf now. I think it's up to him actually to play better. But for me, with the best players that are in the world, I've never rated him my top 5 or even my top 50. But I think he's a good player.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah. But the other thing is I forget Everton had a tough season last season. They finished 12th. And this is a team I remember under Moyes who were competing for a Champions League spot. So, you know, perhaps it's time for a big turnaround there. But it's that old question I remember people always used to ask, would you rather be the best player on a bad team or the worst player on a great team? And I think James Rodriguez is definitely going to be the best player at Everton when he walks in. Yeah. Let's move on. On the other side, we have, not on the other side, but we, on the England front, England went to go and face Iceland, and Mason Greenwood and Phil Foden got themselves into a little bit of trouble. Can you tell us about that? What happened over there in Iceland? It wasn't in Iceland, I don't think.
I'm very interested. Yeah, it was in Iceland. I'm very, very interested to hear Teco and Sean's thoughts on this. You know, I don't want any more details, but I just want to know, like, is this something that players did? I mean, they'll know more than I do, but so what happened was they had girls over at the quarantined hotel where they shouldn't have had any guests. They had two girls come over. And look, it's obviously not a big deal. The big deal is that they broke COVID-19 protocol rules, and that they have now, well, they were dropped for the Denmark game, which was on Tuesday night. What bothers me the most about all of this is the way that they will or have been already and will continue to be treated in the media, in English media in particular. I went on the Daily Mail last night, and on the homepage there were 5 or 6 stories of Greenwood and Foden, you know, reaction pieces of former pros talking about it, their own apologies. They even had an interview with one of the girls who was in the room with them. And I believe that is, you know, it doesn't get lower than that. And that's what gives, like, this profession of journalism a bad rap. It's like, that's the reason I don't get, you know, interviews with these guys, is because they think that we're all like that. So I think it's ridiculous, like, to see how it's blown up. And it's so predictable, Slu. You know that when Greenwood scores his next goal, it's going to be like, you know, the headlines will be Greenwood moves on from England nightmare with goal at Brighton. And everything like that, it's going to be like that for the next year, 2 years. They'll be asked about this in 5 years' time.
Yeah, if they hook up with any blonde girl, it's going to be like Greenwood hooks up with Icelandic model lookalike. And you're like,
It's crazy, man. And they were even talking about, like, Foden, the fact that he's been in a long-term relationship, and Greenwood, you know, he just got out of a relationship in May. It's like, what are you doing reporting this? He's 18 years old.
Yeah.
But anyway, I would love to know, like, what Sean and Teco think about this. I think it's just ridiculous to see how it's blown up. Of course, they broke rules. Gareth Southgate dropped them, and rightfully so. But goodness, I'm sure there's been much worse that has happened, man.
Yeah, you know what, Kurt, it's, you know, when you wear that England badge, it's supposed to mean something. And these guys that are 18 and 19 years old, you can't do what they've done. And
of course,
I'm not defending the stupid journalism, you know, which is ridiculous. I agree with you. But to play for England is like, you know, Gaz has worn this shirt. Stuart Pearce has worn that shirt. You know, Beckham. And then you've got these two youngsters that are these little, I mean, it's not acceptable. So yes, get drops, and I hope they drop for the next few months as well, because I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Wow, Sean, wow.
Tosh.
Wow, that is off.
Wow, wow, wow.
Deco, you're
yep.
Good. I think, yes, I think most of the time we want to justify or give leniency to players at a certain age. We're saying they're still young, they'll learn. I think they knew exactly what they were doing. And like Sean said, I think playing in the national team where you had, you know, your superstars, and you guys are now the younger guys that are, you know, the new generation, you know, there's so much expectations. And I think for them to be irresponsible like that, I think for me, it's unacceptable. And the only way for them to actually, you know, get rid of the critics is to go back onto the pitch and do what they do. Because I think whenever anything that is personal is to affect your game, it becomes a problem. I think you need to be able to separate the two. So I think they need to be careful next time, because because these are type of things that ruin players' careers. Because right now, they might, if they have a bad season, every journalist will be saying, we'll be talking about that story, that maybe this is the reason why. And these are the boys that had a great season last season. So I don't know, understand why they would have to dent it like that. For me, it's unacceptable. Mm.
I will say this. One day on this podcast, I'll talk about all of the that Rooney got up to during his career. I just think that these journals have, like, it's just more of these type of stories that kind of just stick with these players for longer, if you know what I mean. Like Rooney got up to some crazy stuff, but like 2 weeks later you forgot about it, even though it was a lot crazier.
Slu, Rooney was banging goals. Rooney was banging off the field with the prostitutes, going to the pitch, score a hat-trick, finish. So now that's what I'm saying, that the only way to make this story go away is go back to the pitch and do your business shit. Because that's what you want people to know you for. You're a footballer. You want them to know you from a footballing side, not all this nonsense. Yes, we do. We are guys. We around, we do all this type of things, but do that privately. Don't do that now. It exposed the whole England team now. You're putting so much pressure on everyone now. So you can imagine now the senior players within the team. Because now they're going to say, yeah, but the senior players are allowing these kids, or they're not grooming these kids properly, or they're not talking to these boys. But at the end of the day, 18-year-old grown-ass man, you know what's right, you know what's wrong. I mean, you've got an apartment, chief, 2 days, Jay. Can you wait for 2 days and then you can do whatever that you want to do in your own private space? Don't compromise everybody that's in camp. So now other players now they must answer for your
And get tested twice just because you never know. But I think we should move swiftly forward. We're giving a lot of stuff for Simon to bleep out. So last but not least, we have to tie a nice bow on this story that we've covered for the past couple of weeks. But Lionel Messi remains a Barcelona player for at least one more season. Kurt, where do you stand on this one? It's been a dramatic month, to say the least. But what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, look, you guys obviously know my feelings and how tired I am about speaking about all of this. But, you know, it was very interesting to see. I don't know if you guys watched the interview or saw his comments. The interview he gave last week, Friday, it was very, very revealing. He spoke a lot about what the president told him, or the promises the president made to him throughout the year, saying things like, you can leave at the end of the season and we will talk at the end of the season. And Messi kept going, well, okay, I want to leave. These are my plans. The president kept putting off, that chat. Mm-hmm. And then when it came time for Messi to actually, you know, take it further by letting them officially know that he wanted out, the president then went back on his word. So I feel sorry for him. It sucks to me that a player, of that caliber and a player who's done so much for the club wasn't granted his wish. It sucks, but I get the situation. I kind of admire the fact that Messi didn't want to make it uglier by taking it to court. That was his main reason for kind of ending this fight, was the fact that he didn't want to take Barcelona to court. So he stays. It's unfortunate because I was excited to see him in a different league, but hopefully we'll get that next season.
Hopefully, indeed. Very quickly, just to get Deco and Sean involved here, considering everything that's going on with Barcelona and the lack of certainty, the new coach, what do you think your expectations for this team are for this season?
I'll let Teko answer that because he's a Barcelona fan. Because I really don't give a to be honest.
Wow.
Damn. Just because he didn't sign for City, wow. Sean, how?
Yeah, man, I'm over
now
it.
He doesn't
I'm
give
over
it.
It. Yeah. I'm over it.
Oh, Teko. But
look, with what's been happening with Barcelona, especially now, I think next season it's going to be in this situation where every player in Barcelona will be looked at differently, because now the expectations now are higher. You know, and Messi's performance is going to be scrutinized this time around. If he's having a bad game, they'll be saying because he wants to leave. So I think, Inge, it's not going to be a nice season for Messi and for Barcelona on its own, you know. Look, I just hope that with whatever decision that they're making or whatever players that they're bringing in, it's to help the team to be better. Because, and also try to build a team forward, you know, without Messi. I think Barcelona need to start planning, you know, their lives outside of Messi, because I don't see him staying longer than the next season. I don't think what has been happening right now will be fixed within a few months or a season. So for me, as a Barcelona fan, I think Messi should just start watching Prison Break and figure out how to get out of that situation.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant stuff. Kurt, your thoughts on how the season might go for Barcelona?
Look, I agree with Teco. I just think that it takes one goal from Messi for people to just start talking about how good he is again. So I think it will be quickly forgotten. I think it's going to be a very, very tricky season, because there are so many changes that really have to take place in order for this team to be competitive again, especially in Europe. I think that they will be among the top three in Spain, but in Europe, and that we know is the club's main goal. It's Messi's main objective. You know, what I would love to see is for Messi to take this team on his back again and carry them right throughout and even to the Champions League. I mean, that would be the dream. That would be the ultimate dream for Messi to win under those circumstances. You know, having just asked to leave, it'll be so dramatic. It'll be so huge. But I do think it's going to be really difficult. Koeman has a lot of changes to make. There's a lot of players set to come in, a lot of players set to leave. We don't know what's going on. We know Suarez, Vidal, a whole lot of players are linked with a move away. Then we have Wijnaldum and Depay linked with Barcelona. So we don't know what's going to happen. I think that we'll only be able to tell maybe a month or two in. I don't expect it to be very exciting, if I'm honest with you, the football at least. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how things unfold.
Definitely. Well, that is how we wrap up the International News Desk. Thank you very much, Kurt, for joining us on the show.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Kurt. Cheers.
From here, we dive into 10 quickfire questions. That's the segment where we get your favorite PSL players on the line and we put them on the spot. And this week we have...
Hi, my name is Matthew Booth, and these are my 10 quickfire questions.
Who was the funniest guy in the PSL that you played with?
The funniest guy, it's probably your colleague, Sean Roberts. He's got to be up there. Also Elton Mehring. So it's the battle between the two of them.
Okay, cool. I'm going to give it to Elton Mehring because I've heard Sean's jokes. who is the flashiest dresser?
I'd probably say Granville Scott.
Who is the worst dressed that you ever played with?
You could say Sean Roberts.
Agreed. All right. What is the worst mistake you remember making in a match?
Probably giving a back pass to Thierry Henry. Wasn't very wise.
All right. Who was a teammate who thought he was funny, but he actually had no good jokes?
So I'm not allowed to say Sean Roberts again, I think. Well, there were so many. Trying to think now.
We could give it to Sean Roberts and just say that he thought he was funny and so you laughed at him, you know, that's why he was.
Yeah, no, that's, and your listeners have realized that, so that could be a good answer.
All right, what is your favorite footballing memory across your entire career?
I'd probably say two, Olympics and the Confed Cup 2009.
Very nice. And then, okay, so you're a defender. So what is the best goal that you witnessed while on the field of play?
Probably Catlejo Mpela's free kick against Casillas in the third and fourth playoff, Confed Cup 2009.
And what is your favorite car in the world at the moment?
My favorite car, my dream car would probably be... Aston Martin.
Aston Martin. Are you a DB9 guy or one of the newer ones?
DB9, yeah.
DB9. In South Africa, what is your favorite local food?
Sushi. Oh, local, okay. definitely not sushi. I think it's my wife's chakalaka.
Very nice. And last but not least, what is your favorite holiday destination?
That would be... Maldives.
Chakalaka and sushi, guys. That's the combo right there. All right.
A local dish.
Yeah. That's the combo. From one great footballer to a secret footballer. The secret footballer is where Sean takes a look at the back page of Kickoff magazine, where an anonymous individual tells a story about what's happening in local football. What do you got for us this week, Shono?
So I talk about my favorite team, Chipper United, a bit, but so does this player. He says that that team has not done anything for the Eastern Cape in terms of development. What have they done? Nothing. Why did he move Chipper United to the Eastern Cape if he's not going to help develop the community? So it's actually quite an interesting one. I mean, Teko, I think my question goes to you. Is it, do you think that teams in the PSL, they need to be held accountable in terms of, you know, product development, but especially with what they do within the community?
I think with that, Sean, I think that's why maybe the Disky Challenge was implemented, you know, so that key teams are forced to have the younger players playing in that league. But also, I think it all goes down to what type of a team are you guys? Are you the ones that are trying to outsource the local talent and make sure that the development around you is properly or uplift the area that you guys are in? So I think it depends on what kind of a team are you. And but honestly, if we have to look at cheaper, we'll be asking too much of them. We're asking them stuff that they don't have. We know how they've been running the team. You know, I've been treating the players, the coaches as well. So imagine if we say Chipper also has to focus on the development and do something in the Eastern Cape. That's something that will never happen, Chief. So for
never.
Me, yeah, I think for me, I think structurally, I think every team should be having a development side. I think every team should be, you know, there's that, like, long ago, gone are those days where we knew that, you know, with Ajax, with Bidford Verts, they'll have, you know, stronger development side or Super Sport United. I think every team now should be having that. But I think with the implementation of the Disky Challenge, I think it forced the teams that really didn't want to do that actually start doing it. And you can see now, even in the bubble, you could see how many players were used from the Disky Challenge. So I think there's a little bit of progress, but hopefully with all the teams, they'll start doing that more often, where we can see so many young players are coming in within the development structures. But don't put Chipper in that conversation, because you are sending stuff that.
Sure.
Yeah, a whole lot needs to change that side. Up next, we have a feature called This Week in Football History.
Today, we remember great moments from the past. We dive into the time capsule. Join us as we remember great moments from this week in football history.
This week, back in 2008, Theo Walcott scored his first hat-trick, and it just happened to make him the youngest player ever to do so for England. He did it against Croatia, and he was 19 years and 178 days old. You don't laugh at me, man. All right. Up next, this week in 2010, Bahrain secured a 3-0 win over Togo in a friendly, or so they thought. It turns out, and this is true, they faced a team that was not Togo at all. They had scheduled the friendly. It played out in Bahrain. They played the full match. And then it turns out afterwards the Togo Federation goes, we don't know who you guys are playing. We don't know any of those. Those guys are not Togo internationals. And it turned out that the Togo assistant coach, he's the one who organized the match and then falsely represented the team and just brought a bunch of random guys. And then this last one, Sean, you'll appreciate. It's two separate moments, one that just became legendary and one that went viral when it happened. So back in 1995, Colombia and England played to a scoreless draw in a London friendly. The match remains notable as the debut of the Colombian goalkeeper René Higuita's invention of the scorpion kick save. We all know that clip. I'm sure you remember, Sean. You did it many times in your career. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, sir.
Yeah, right.
That's what I was remembered for.
Yeah, he invented it. You perfected it. Is what
correct?
They say. All right. And also, this week in 2010. FAR Rabat goalkeeper Khalid Askri committed a blunder that made him an instant internet celebrity. He saved a penalty kick, or so he thought. Again, he saved it. The ball kind of comes out, but it's got backspin. Now what happens is the goalkeeper stands up, he starts celebrating to the fans, and the ball slowly spins its way back over the line, and it counts as a goal. As long as it's still in play, that's a goal right there. So never celebrate too early. But that's been this week in football history. Up next, let us discuss Sundown's roster for next season and this insane number of signings that they have. I've got the list in front of me. There's the likes of Aubrey Modiba, Shalu Lile, Mvala. We've already had Grant Margeman. There's Hashim Domingo, Ricardo Goss, Gift Motupa, George Maluleka, Jody February. The list goes on. So I want to know, who is your eye on? Who are the signings that you think are going to shine for Sundown specifically?
Right. I'm going to give you two. And I'm going to say George Maluleka and Peter Shalulile. I think Sundowns have missed a player like Peter Shalulile this season, and I think he's going to bring a lot there. And I honestly believe George Maluleka is going to add so much value to that Sundowns midfield. And I can see that towards the end of the season now, where Sundowns were lacking, and it's exactly there. I still don't think Rivaldo could stay as a six. I still prefer him as a central defender. That everyone might disagree with me, but that's fine. But I think Georgie is going to do a fantastic job there.
I'll give it three. I'll say Peter Shalulile, Lesedi Kapinga, and George Maluleka. I think, for obvious reasons, I think Lesedi Kapinga has that, Serena flair, your Tembazwani flair, and he will fit perfectly within the team because of that's how he plays. I think George will bring so much stability into the midfield, and I think we've seen in the Bar Bubble how much they struggled in the midfield. I think George will be very, very important. And for Peter Shalulile, I think Sean covered it very well. I think they need a player like him, the guy that can score all type of goals, that is willing to run, knowing Mamelodi Sundowns, they like pace up front, and that's what they struggle with, especially in this season. I think Shalulile will do wonders for Mamelodi Sundowns.
So now, they're chasing the treble this year, with the Nedbank Cup final this weekend. What do you guys think is the target for Peter Mosimane? We all know the trophy that he really, really wants. How many trophies do you think they could, considering the number of signings, and this is already a potential treble winning side that they have currently, how many trophies do you think they'll be shooting for next season? Do you think they want them all and they're capable, or do you think that they're really going for the continental one?
No, I think knowing Pizzo, it's all or nothing, and I think with the squad they're going to have next season, they're going to be. I mean, obviously first prize is the Continental Cup without a doubt, but there's no reason why they can't win the league and the other cups that come with it. So how many is that? Is that four cups? Four or five?
Yeah.
So I honestly believe they have enough depth and enough quality to go all the way.
I think Pizzo now will actually say it's the right time to have two different squads that play two different competitions. I think
yes, sir.
He'll want to win. He'll want to go all out for everything that's available, and that's who he is. That's the DNA of Sundowns. The demands are win everything. So I think he'll go all out and try also win the Champions League again.
Now, as we close out, we need a car of the week. I have zero good segue there. So.
Yeah, so we talk about Sergio Ramos's car collection a bit, where Audis feature heavily, as does a stunning £167,000 Mercedes AMG C63. Yet the one he shows off most proudly to his 40 million odd Instagram followers is valued at just £8,000. That's 150,000 Rand. Yes, Ramos, a World Cup hero, double European champion, Bernabeu skipper, and three-time Champions League winner, gives preference to a simple motor many learner drivers would turn their nose up at. Ramos revealed the personalized Fiat 600, an early birthday present bought from his mates. I don't have much info on the actual car, but that's the one he goes to training and back in, a little £8,000-er.
Oh, very nice. So like just a little city car.
Yeah, very cool.
Very nice. Well, we need a motivational quote of the week. I think, who needs it the most is Kaiser Chiefs. They need this motivational quote of the week. Sean, what you got?
Jab.
This one, jab. This one is from Ronwyn Williams, who in my opinion has been the goalkeeper of the season.
Golden
but anyway, he says, there is always a reason to smile. find it.
Nice. Very nice. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That's it, buddy. And Chiefs can use that.
Definitely. All right. That is how we wrap up the car wash for today. Whether you've been listening to us on the SL podcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Game Time on Mahigang 96.7 FM. A big thank you for joining us on the show. I've been your host, Slu Paho. That's been Sean Roberts.
Yes, sir.
And that's been Teko Modise.
Awe, my buta.
And we close off the show with a spotlight with a guy called Russell Thompson, who runs a great initiative called RT Goalkeeping. That's how we close out the show. We'll see you this time at the same place next week. Peace. Hi there, Russ. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. And you, sir?
You've got this. It's a goalkeeping school. Would you be able to give me a brief history of it and how you got involved with the initiative?
I started a goalkeeping program. I'd like to stay away from the word school or academy. It's a goalkeeping program. It's called RT Goalkeeping. So what we do is we focus on, there's two aspects of it. So we focus on the strength, conditioning, flexibility, and rehabilitation for goalkeeper specific movements. And then we go into goalkeeper coaching. So the players would come down, the keepers would come down. We've got a biokineticist that I'm working with from a company called GMT that we operate out of Glenwood High School. And he previously worked at Amazulu and the Sharks. So he develops goalkeeper-specific strength and conditioning exercises, which match what I'm going to be doing in my session. So it's getting the goalkeeper supple, getting the right movements, you know, from the word go, so that when they come into the exercises, they're ready for those exercises. And a nice part of it is we work with elite bands, so tension bands, resistant bands, which is nice because it obviously the resistance in terms of the exercises is building strength for the goalkeepers, and it's also incorporating positive movements. So obviously with the resistance of the bands, it's forcing the keepers to make those forward movements. So within that, it helps correct the technique, which is very important, you know. So the keepers are always doing the exercises at obviously 100%, and they technically doing it correctly.
So what inspired you to start a program like this? Very particular, because it sounds like almost a holistic goalkeeping kind of like program that focuses on all aspects of goalkeeping specifically. So what inspired you to start this sort of thing rather than, you know, just go into coaching at a club or something like that?
Well, you know, I mean, I was formerly coaching at Amazulu. I was with the youth and the reserve team there, and I was there for about 3 or 4 seasons. And then after I left there, you know, I just wanted to focus because I think goalkeepers are a lot of the times left out. And I think it's very important because obviously they are a key part of a team. And I think it's important that they get the specific treatment and the specific exercises and training programs, you know, that other players get. So I wanted to make it an all-round training session for a goalkeeper. You know, I think gone are the days where, you know, the kid that can't play or has got 2 left feet, you know, goes in goals. You know, the modern day goalkeeper, you know, is so much different to, you know, to what goalkeeping was a few years ago. So, by doing this, you concentrate and you're focusing on exact movements that a goalkeeper's making. Yeah. You know, so just by doing general stretches and general warm-ups, you're not really focusing on the movements that a goalkeeper's making during a game and during training. So, you know, I wanted to make it an all-round program for a goalkeeper where everything is based on goalkeeping and goalkeeping-specific movements and strength and conditioning aspects. So, yeah, as I say, it came from, you know, seeing how goalkeepers are left out in a lot of the times and just cast-aside training sessions where, you know, hopefully one day, you know, at club level that these sort of sessions are structured within their, you know, the team's training sessions, which I think is important.
Now, one last thing. How do you select which goalkeepers to work with, or how do goalkeepers get involved with this program?
So I've obviously got a Facebook page and an Instagram page where I obviously promote the brand through there. And then, you know, what I do is when a keeper comes down, there's obviously a few keepers that I have worked with in the past previously. So I know, you know, technically where they are. So I try generally to get you know, the more advanced keepers in a session together, and then keepers that I haven't worked with before, they obviously come down for an intro session where I can gauge where they are, what they need to work on, and then I obviously pull them from there. And then obviously when a keeper does progress and they are, you know, getting better and technically better, then, you know, we move them into the other days where the more technically advanced keepers are. So it's across the board. So I work with keepers that have never been coached before to keepers that have had coaching and, you know, have been in the game for a while as well. So that's how we group them. So, I mean, my main aim is, you know, and also just going back to, with the program, I think there's so many goalkeeper trainers out there, you know, where there's very few goalkeeper coaches. And I think it's very important to focus on coaching goalkeepers rather than just training them. So it's not about the amount of repetitions they can do. It's the amount of repetitions with quality and with technique, which is very important.
So now I see you guys are, it's a RT_goalkeeping, right, on Instagram.
Yeah, RT goalkeeping, yeah.
And then is there any other platform? I think you mentioned Facebook.
Yes, we're on Facebook. So it's RT Goalkeeping on Facebook. And all my details are on there. And it also gives you a brief breakdown of how the sessions work, and everything it entails as well.
Fantastic.
And we do update on a weekly basis when you've had sessions, and, you know, post videos on that. So people who, you know, want to see what we're about, they can go to those different, you know, the various platforms and see how we coach and how we work, and then obviously get in touch with us from there. And then we're more than happy to have a look at a keeper and incorporate them into the program with us.
Fantastic stuff. Well, Russell, thank you so much for joining me on the show. It's a great way to close off the car wash this week. And hope you have a fantastic rest of the year and 2021 further.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And thanks for having me.
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on the SL podcast. Sizohlangana khona.